Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Mackie, and I'll be reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. RRC suspends deep water injection. Official, decision to move operations makes sense as seismicity increases. By Mella McEwen. Last week's swarm of earthquakes around Midland in the span of about 24 hours has the Railroad Commission putting a halt to deep water injection effective December 31st. On Monday, the Commission ordered the indefinite suspension of all deep produced water injection in its Gardendale seismic response area, which stretches from north of Odessa to northwest of Midland. Producers will not be permitted to inject below the top of the Strawn Formation, which occurs at around 10,000 feet but can vary. Operators in the SRA will be allowed to apply to amend their injection permits for shallow injection, such as into the San Andres Formation, the top of which occurs at about 5,000 feet. Deeper portions of such amended disposal wells will be required to be plugged. The Railroad Commission staff has stated that they are concerned about produced water disposal, especially into the Ellenberger Formation, given the rapid rise in Midland and Martin County seismicity. Jason Genero, Chief Executive Officer of Breakwater Energy, told the Reporter Telegram by email. He added, with over 2,000 disposals in Texas, deep well saltwater disposals are still an important tool in managing produced water. However, it makes sense for operators to move produced water away from population centers and seismic clusters. It also makes sense to try and recycle as many of these barrels as possible, especially near RRC action regions. Breakwater monitors regulatory developments regarding injection wells as part of its role in developing sustainable water solutions in the Permian Basin. The company has permitted and constructed the state's largest commercial-produced water recycling facilities located in Howard County. The commission determined the suspensions were necessary because of an ever-increasing pattern of earthquakes in the area. The earthquakes last Wednesday and Thursday had magnitudes of 3.1, 3.6, 3.7, and 3.3, according to the state's TexNet seismic monitoring program. Inspectors and geologists have been inspecting disposal activity and constantly monitoring seismic data. Staff have monitored approximately 30 earthquakes with a magnitude greater than 3.0 in the Gardendale SRA since December 2019. The Commission's seismologists and staff will continue to monitor earthquakes in the area and take further action as necessary. To assist those operators seeking to amend their injection permits for shallow injection, the Commission will expedite review of those applications in the Gardendale SRA. MISD presents calendar options. School Board to Review Community Input Made Online by Stuart Doreen. There are intersession days in two drafts of the 2022-23 school calendar MISD has sent out to parents and the Midland ISD community, but the 2 weeks of intersession didn't make the cut. The District Educational Improvement Committee, which is made up of teachers, 80%, parents, and community members, according to the district, has provided its options for the school calendar. The district stated that calendars can be found at Midland ISD's website, https://www.midlandisd.org/. midlandisd.net/page/35827, and the community can comment on the calendars. These comments will be shared with the school board during the January 18th meeting, Superintendent Angelica Ramsley reported in her weekly letter to parents, staff, and the community. The board will have an additional month to review the drafts before voting on a calendar in February. When the item is presented to the board in January, the item is an information item only. That means there will not be a board vote in January. Calendar item number one provides intercession days on 9 different Saturdays during the year for students who need the extra help. That time is split up into one day a month in September, October, and December. During the spring semester, there are intercession days in March, April, 4, and May. That draft shows school beginning on August the 10th, 2022, and ending on May 26th, 2023. Calendar item number 2 calls for intercession week in March before the scheduled spring break. That is the extent of the intercession for students. There are no other days in the fall or on Saturdays. Calendar number 2 calls for school to start on August 10th and to end on June 1st. Providing intervention opportunities leading to improved academic achievement is a non-negotiable, Superintendent Angelica Ramsey told the Reporter Telegram in an email. The calendar is one tool to achieve that, but it is not the only tool we have. Regardless of how intercession is or isn't in the calendar, the expectation of providing intervention will not change. If the final calendar does not have built-in intercession weeks, campuses will have to create intervention schedules within the day and outside of the school day for students who are struggling academically and who failed the STAR/EOC. Midland ISD received pushback on the calendar, specifically from board member Katie Joyner, who has called weeks of intercession a threat to the family unit, even saying that she didn't want families to have to pick between vacations to Disney World and having their children on campus. Planning and Zoning. Commissioners reject cell tower by Mella McEwen. Debate over expanded cell phone coverage dominated the last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting of 2021. Commissioners Monday debated a request by Falk and Foster for a specific use designation without term to install a monopole cell tower on the property of Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church at 5110 North Garfield Street. At least 3 neighboring residents spoke before commissioners to oppose the planned 100-foot tower, expressing concern that it would devalue their properties and opposition to living under the tower's shadow and seeing it through all the windows of their homes. One speaker brought up concerns about the tower's proximity to Midland Air Park. Another point raised and echoed by commissioners was that city ordinances do not allow cell towers in residential areas and that they are located only on commercial property or in rural areas. Commissioners expressed concern about the precedent that would be set if the request was approved. Ralph Weingarten with Falk and Fossner said the location is based on needs as determined by radio frequencies. The owner of the tower would be Hemphill out of Tulsa, which already owns 2 towers in Midland. Weingarten said pains have been taken to conceal the electrical equipment associated with the tower within the pole, and it would be painted a neutral gray color to make it less visible. If built, he said Verizon would be the first tenant, though Hemphill is pursuing other carriers. Ultimately, commissioners were unpersuaded and voted unanimously to deny the request, which now goes to City Council. Commissioners did approve a request by Salvador Hernandez for a specific use designation without term for automobile or other motorized vehicle sales and services. Hernandez plans to develop Zacateca Auto Sales at 2500 Front Street. There are already four existing buildings and structures on the property, which will remain except for the removal of one structure. The office building has 432 square feet, and the site plan calls for 19 parking spaces, including 6 for customers and 13 for car sales. Proposed hours would be from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Saturday. Obituaries. Kenneth Allen Peeler. Ken grew up in Levelland, Texas, while his father managed the local Higginbotham and Bartlett Lumber Yard. It was in Levelland that Kenneth would meet the love of his life, Laveau Bigham Peeler, who predeceased him just 28 days prior to their 69th wedding anniversary. She kept every letter from Kenneth beginning at age 14 while he was attending Boy Scout summer camp in Post, Texas, and continuing until their marriage on December 22, 1948. After their wedding, the couple returned to Belton, Texas, while he was completing his tour of duty with the U.S. Army's 41st Infantry Battalion at Camp Hood, Texas. Kenneth once said, "My dad was one who believed in giving back to the community, and I grew up that way." Linda Ruth Gober. Linda Ruth Gober, 79, of Midland, passed peacefully into the arms of her Savior on December 18, 2021, after a largely unknown battle with dementia. Linda bravely persevered through pain and worry and is now resting in the beauty and peace of heaven. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, December 22, 2021, at Nally Pickle and Welch. Funeral service will be held and live-streamed at 1 p.m. Thursday, December 23, 2021, at Crestview Baptist Church. Interment will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Linda was born on March 16, 1942, to Orbia, O.A., and Alice Nunn in Wichita Falls, Texas. Linda was joyously met in heaven by the love of her life and husband of 58 years, Clifton Gober, sweet son Darren Gober, loving parents O.A. and Alice Nunn, her second mom, Aunt Julie, devoted big sister Louise Chance, sweet son-in-law, Joe Flood, and beloved nieces, nephews, cousins, family, and friends. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Dementia Society of America by mail to P.O. Box 600, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, 18901, or online at www.dementiasociety.org/DC/donate to aid in their mission to provide care and resources to families struggling with dementia. Mary Laureen McLean Greer. Mary Laureen McLean Greer of Midland passed on to heaven on December 18, 2021, at the age of 94 years. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, December 21, 2021, at the Monahans Memorial Cemetery in Monahans, Texas. A celebration of her life will take place 2 p.m. Tuesday, December 21, 2021, at the First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. Mary was born on September 4, 1927, in Borger, Texas, the middle daughter of the late Fletch and Adona McLean. Preceding Mary in death were her husband, Lou, sons, Roy Dean and Lucian Jr. Mary is survived by two grandchildren, Lance Greer and Jenna Greer, 8 great-grandchildren, 7 great-great-grandchildren, and lifelong friend, like a daughter, Brenda Helmke, numerous nieces and nephews, and a host of precious friends. In lieu of flowers, please consider donations to Chosen People Ministries, https://www.chosenpeople.com/site/donation, or the Texas Baptist Children's Home, 1101 North Mays Street, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Stephen Galindo Aranda. Stephen Galindo Aranda, 32, went to be with the Lord on Saturday, December 18, 2021, in San Antonio, Texas, after a long and courageous battle with cancer. Funeral services will be held on Wednesday, December 22, 2021, at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family visitation will be held on Monday, December 20, 2021, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Visitation for family and friends will be held on Tuesday, December 21, 2021, from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. All services and visitations will be held at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Stephen is survived by his parents, Eduardo and Josefina Aranda, and his maternal grandmother, Jesus Hernandez Galindo, all of Midland. He is also survived by his maternal aunts, Maribel Armendariz, Bahola Galindo, Norma Galindo Hernandez, Mary Cortez, and Leticia Gonzalez, all of Midland. Surviving paternal relatives, Felix Hernandez, Manuel Aranda, Maria Esther Aranda, Pedro Aranda, and Guadalupe Aranda. Stephen was preceded in death by his paternal grandparents, Alfredo Aranda and Esther Anaya Irreviv, and his maternal grandfather, Salvador O. Galindo. He is also preceded in death by his maternal uncle, Leo Galindo Hernandez. Preceding him in death on his paternal side include Jose Aranda, Ignacio Aranda, Refugio Aranda, and Jesus Aranda. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Eva Hilda Olivas. Eva Hilda Olivas, 79, of Midland, passed away Thursday, December 17, 2021. A funeral service will be Tuesday, December 21, 2021, at 2 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Burial will follow at Racehaven Memorial Park. She is survived by 3 sons, Joy Olivas, Octavio Olivas Jr., and Noe Olivas, 3 daughters, Chayla Chavez, Livier Villalobos, and Eva Witt. 3 sisters, Montserrat Caravejo, Mercedes Caravejo, and Luz Caravejo. 8 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. Frances Marie Kinsey. Frances Marie Kinsey of Midland passed from this life on 12/17/21 in Midland, Texas. She was born in Grand Falls, Texas, to Minnie Florence Warner Gray and Orville Jewel Warner on 2/27/44. A celebration of life will be scheduled for a later date. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Hazel Adele Reichel. Hazel Adele Reichel, 97, of Midland, passed away Sunday, December 19, 2021, surrounded by family. Funeral services are pending with Ellis Funeral Home. Joey Baltier. Joey Baltier, 59, of Midland, Texas, passed away Friday, December 17, 2021, in Midland. Viewing will be Wednesday, December 22, 2021, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Thursday, December 23, 2021, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Willowbrook Funeral Home, 1311 West Florida Avenue, Midland, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 6 p.m. Thursday, December 23, 2021, at Willowbrook Funeral Home Chapel with Pastor Jesse Arizipi officiating. Services entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrook.com. Kimberly Glass. Kimberly Glass, 60, died on December 17, 2021. Kim was born November 16, 1961, in Midland, Texas, to Willa Dean and Charles Henderson. She graduated from Midland Lee High School in 1980 and moved to Austin soon after. Kim graduated with highest honors from University of Texas's School of Nursing and was a registered nurse at Seton Hospital until her ALS diagnosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, in 2019. Marjorie Downs. Marjorie Downs, 91, of Midland, passed away Monday, December the 20th, 2021. Services are pending with Ellis Funeral Home. Renee A. Navarrete. Renee A. Navarrete, 63, from Midland, Texas, passed on December 19th, 2021. Viewing will be Tuesday, December 21st, 2021, from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Evening prayer service will be held Tuesday, December 21st, 2021, at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home, 405 North Terrell Street, Midland, Texas, 79701. Graveside service will be held Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021, at 2 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery, located at 6800 South Texas 349, Midland, Texas 79706. He is survived by his wife, Margie Navarrete, daughters Deanne Martinez, Melissa M. Romero, Crystal Henestrosa, a son, Rene Navarrete Jr., 12 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren, brothers Francisco Navarrete, Octavio Navarrete, and Philemon Navarrete, sisters Maria Galindo, Emma Carrasco, and Rosa Navarrete. Ruby Jean McAdams. Ruby Jean McAdams, 85, of Midland, passed away December 17, 2021. Professional services conducted by Ellis Funeral Home. Wanda Garner. Wanda Garner, 80, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, December 19, 2021. There are no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Kim. I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. RCC cracks down on earthquakes. Responding to a steadily worsening crisis with earthquakes in the Permian Basin, the Texas Railroad Commission on Monday ordered the indefinite suspension of all deep oil and gas-produced water injection in the Gardendale Seismic Response Area, effective December 31st. Operators of disposal wells in the RRC's Gardendale SRA, which is north of Odessa, and northwest of Midland will not be permitted to inject below the top of the Strawn Formation, which occurs at around 10,000 feet in depth, but can vary, said RCC spokesman Andrew Keyes. The RRC determined that the suspensions were necessary because of an ever-increasing pattern of earthquakes in the area. The four earthquakes last Wednesday and Thursday had a magnitude of 3.1, 3.6, 3.7, and 3.3, according to the state's TexNet Seismic Monitoring Program. Inspectors and geologists have been inspecting disposal activity and constantly monitoring seismic data. RRC staff have monitored approximately 30 earthquakes with a magnitude greater than 3.0 in the Gardendale SRA since December 2019. Keyes said the operators of existing disposal wells would be allowed to apply to amend their permits for shallow injection, such as in the San Andreas Formation, the top of which occurs at a depth of about 5,000 feet. Deeper portions of such amended disposal wells will be required to be plugged. RRC's seismologists and staff will continue to monitor earthquakes in the area and take further action as is necessary, Keyes said. Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards called the RRC's initiative an incredibly important decision. "It is the only answer right now to the seismic events that happened last week," said Edwards, former president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. "It's a tough decision for the commissioners to have to make with the people who have that kind of capital investment in those areas. But because the magnitudes are over three, it had become a public safety issue that had to be addressed immediately. Making this decision so quickly and getting it implemented is exactly what needs to be done. Hopefully from this, we will see the earthquakes diminish altogether to ensure that this was the right decision." Asked if the RRC's action should dispel perceptions that the agency is in the pocket of the energy industry, Edwards said, "That's the standard jargon of people who want to hurt the Texas oil and gas industry, but the commission is doing a great job with these seismicity issues, even though the companies will incur some tremendous expenses to move the water to other areas. I'm proud of Commissioners Jim Wright, Wayne Christian, and Christy Craddock because it dispels the narrative that they only do things in favor of the industry. Christy is from here, and Jim and Wayne have been here personally a lot of times to investigate." The RRC's action came on the heels of its September 23rd request to have half dozen area oil companies to decrease their daily pumping to fewer than 10,000 barrels. Spokesman for Fasken Oil and Ranch, Rattler Midstream Operating, a subsidiary of Diamondback Energy, and COG Operating, a ConocoPhillips subsidiary, said then that either they would comply or they were already doing so. While Occidental Petroleum, Pioneer Natural Resources, and Wasser Operating did not respond to requests for comments. Fasken Oil and Ranch had 5 wells, Rattler Midstream 8, COG Operating 15, Occidental 4, Pioneer Natural Resources 8, and the Mabee Ranch-owned Wasser Operating had one that was permitted to pump 60,000 barrels a day. Ed Loniker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, said from Austin Monday that continued evaluation was needed. "This action stems from the notion that deep saltwater disposal is likely contributing to the seismicity within the Gardendale SRA," Loniker said. "While this action doesn't come as a surprise, we will need to continue evaluating all available data to determine causation and the right path forward. TIP Pro and the Texas oil and gas industry have consistently supported additional seismicity research, collaboration, and related funding requests, and will continue to do so." Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples, said oil and natural gas operators here are actively using proven technology to improve all aspects of operation through practices such as pre-completion risk assessment, proper monitoring and mitigation protocols. We believe more data is always better, and the oil and natural gas industry continues to work collaboratively and extensively with the Railroad Commission, industry peers, TexNet, and the Center for Integrated Seismicity Research to monitor and share data and gather information that guides industry practices, Staples said. Odessans come together for Meals on Wheels. With the kids grown and gone, the holidays can be a particularly lonely time for older folks, and COVID-19 certainly isn't helping. But the volunteers at Meals on Wheels and other Odessans are doing their part to alleviate those feelings of isolation. Since Thanksgiving, the East 5th Street nonprofit has been collecting blankets, slippers, gloves, and scarves under its warming tree in the lobby, said Executive Director Margaret Burton. In addition, they've also been collecting all manner of personal hygiene products, including lotions, shampoos, lip balms, etc. We take the items and put them in our boardroom, and our volunteers pick out items to deliver them, Burton said. It's even better if they know the clients because it's more personal that way. Meals on Wheels, which has 200 regular volunteers, delivers roughly 450 lunches Monday through Friday, Burton said. The community has been quite generous, but additional donations would be appreciated, she said. Ashbury Methodist donated sacks and sacks of warm items, and the students at Barbara Jordan Elementary School launched a blanket campaign in honor of the late Sue Gardner that brought in 456 blankets, Burton said. Gary Garner, who was dropping off more blankets Monday, said his wife volunteered for Meals on Wheels for more than 6 years. About 20 years ago, she and their daughter, former Barbara Jordan teacher Lisa Anderson, convinced students to create Christmas cards for Meals on Wheels participants, a tradition that continues to this date, she said. He lost his wife of 59 years in September and thought the blanket drive was a fitting tribute to her. Volunteers Don Riggs and Gerardo Moreno said the clients are thrilled with their gifts. They feel happy because some people have taken an interest in them, Moreno said through a Spanish-speaking interpreter. Those who donate also come away feeling good, Burton said. We think the givers know they are filling a need, she said. They know that when people are only making $700 to $800 a month, they've got to watch what they spend, and sometimes they have to do so without, and so many of them living by themselves. Just recently, Burton said she received a call from a woman in tears because she's received a birthday card from Meals on Wheels. She told me it was the first card and only card she'd received because she didn't have anyone, Burton said. By the end of the call, I was crying too. Some of these people are so lonely, and the least little thing is dear to them. O Come and Adore Him. Second Baptist Church prepares for 66 Live Nativity. It's a tradition that's been going on since 1955, and it'll continue this year as Second Baptist Church holds its 66th annual Live Nativity scene. This year's Live Nativity, as always, will be open to the public and will take place from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. December 23rd and from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. December 24th at 711 East 17th. Second Baptist Church pastor Jackie Brim says the Live Nativity is something he and the congregation look forward to every year. We started this in 1955, and the way it works, we have a setup in our courtyard, and we have people dress up as the different characters in the biblical area, Brim said. We have the wise men and the angels, and we have music playing in the background, with scripture being read at different intervals. People can either come and sit and listen, or people can drive by and take a look at it. It's a serene scene to be part of. It's great. While members of the church take part in the Live Nativity, Brim said they've had plenty of outside help every year as well. In the past, we've had some different groups in the community come and be a part of it as well, as a few other churches, Brim said. We've had families take entire standings, or an entire family will get different members, and extend the family to take part of an entire stand. Roughly 60 people total take part in the event every year. We have 4 standings on the first 2 nights and 2 standings on the last night, Brim said. There are 11 people that are each standing, and then we have people in the background and people who come take care of the animals and make sure they get out. We have people who direct the crowd where to go, and we have people in our kitchen. I'd say there are about 50 to 60 people that take part in this and help put this together. Brim said that there's no specific director of the live nativity, saying that everyone knows what to do when putting it on. It's one of those things where it's been going on for so long that everyone knows their task come the night of the event. Brim said, we have a few people that help out with the costumes and help us get dressed. We have our music minister and our sound guy, and then we have a few deacons and a few other folks who intermingle with the crowd when they come. Real animals are also included in the live nativity. This year, we're going to have 2 sheep and a goat, and then we have a donkey as well, Brim said. We had one donkey in the past that we used to use, but then we had to retire her. There are numerous different challenges that Second Baptist Church has faced over the years, from the weather to last year's pandemic. It can be different things at different times, Brim said. Last year, it was a little bit challenging because of COVID. We had to do things a little bit different. There are times where weather can be an issue. I had some members talk about times where they remember doing it in the snow and how they persevered through because of the message that's proclaimed is so important. Jerry Robinson, who helped set up the sound system for the music at each live nativity, has been a longtime member and has helped out with it every year. I've been involved with it ever since it started as a teenager, Robinson said. I was 12 or 13 whenever it started. I was involved with it throughout junior high and high school. I went to college and came back and have been involved with it since I came back in 1967. One of Brent's favorite parts is doing the live nativity every year is proclaiming the message of Christmas. The message of Christmas is that Jesus is called the Prince of Peace. So we can proclaim that message to the community, and most importantly for me, proclaiming at Christmas that Christ came to give us life and life eternal, Brim said. If you go, what? 66th Annual Live Nativity. When? 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. December 22nd and 23rd. 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. December 24th. Where? Second Baptist Church. 711 East 17th. COVID-19 news by the numbers. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 27,597 total cases, 564 deaths. Midland County, 30,040 total cases, 403 deaths. Texas, 4,431,974 total cases, 75,077 deaths. U.S. cases, 50,791,012 total confirmed and 803,593 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Christmas music performances on air. The West Texas A&M University School of Music will air Christmas music performances at 7 p.m. today, midnight Thursday, 8 p.m. Friday, and 1 a.m. Sunday on Panhandle PBS. Conductors are Pullen and Brandon Farren of Canyon High. Local WT Symphony Orchestra members are Christopher Santiago, Odessa Horn Payne Morris, Odessa Trumpet Justin Slaughter, Odessa Bass Trombone, Byron Roberts, Midland Second Violin, Marin Bullock, Midland Violoncello, Marcus Cornute, Midland Double Bass, Rachel Stansell, Midland Clarinet, and Emily Sotelo, Midland Trumpet. Local WT Symphony Orchestra members are Christopher Santiago, Odessa Horn, Payne Morris, Odessa Trumpet, Justin Slaughter, Odessa Bass Trombone, Byron Roberts, Midland Second Violin, Marin Bullock, Midland Violoncello, Marcus Cornute, Midland Double Bass, Rachel Stansell, Midland Clarinet, and Emily Sotelo, Midland Trumpet. Local and area WT choir members are Haley Arnold, sophomore, Midland Chorale Soprano, Enrique Lujan, senior, Midland Bass, Carolyn Malone, junior, Midland Collegiate Choir Soprano, Jonna Sloan, freshman, Midland Collegiate Choir Soprano, Kelly Crabtree, freshman, San Angelo Collegiate Choir Soprano, Isabel Quiros, senior, Odessa Collegiate Choir Alto, and Haley Arnold, freshman, Midland Chamber Singer Soprano. For more information, visit wtamu.edu. 66th Annual Live Nativity, Second Baptist Church, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled the 66th Annual Live Nativity from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, and from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. Visit tinyurl.com/2p89wj3c. Holiday closure. The City of Odessa office will be closed Friday and December 27th for the Christmas holiday. Trash will not be picked up on Friday. Customers will roll out carts. Normal service on Thursday can expect service on Wednesday, and those normally serviced on Friday can expect service Thursday. Residential rollout carts and brown dumpsters will be serviced as scheduled Monday. Residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once. Apartments and commercial will be serviced twice. The household hazardous waste facility will be closed Friday and Monday. Residential rollout carts and brown dumpsters will be serviced as scheduled Monday. To avoid an overflowing accumulation of trash and debris in dumpsters, citizens are asked to recycle items at the Odessa Recycle Center, 816 West 42nd Street. Drop-off window for cardboard, plastics, paper, aluminum, and tin cans are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Trash, debris, and bulky items piled next to the alley dumpsters is illegal and prevents the solid waste trucks from being able to pick up the containers when service resumes. During the holiday period, city trash receptacles should be serviced for perishable items only. For more information, call Martha Cortazar at 432-335-4836 or visit odessa-techs.gov/492/recycling-center. Christmas Eve services. Emmanuel Baptist Church, 4020 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Christmas Eve worship from 2:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Friday. Call 366-4439 or visit tinyurl.com/5cm7tfkw. Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Texas 191 Midland, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service with candlelight worship at 3:30 p.m., 5 p.m., and 6 p.m. Friday. There will be Christmas carols, communion, holiday treats, and more. Visit tinyurl.com/5c7jann8. Community Bible Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Friday. There will be carols, cocoa, and candlelight. Visit tinyurl.com/2zmetzjn. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 8860 Andrews Highway, has scheduled its annual Christmas Eve celebration, The Story of Love, from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Friday. The Fine Arts Ministry will present an original drama with classic favorite Christmas songs. This is an event that is fun for an entire family. Admission is free. For more information, call 432-368-7714 or email ocfc@ocfc.org or visit ocfc.org. First Baptist Church, 311 West 8th Street, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service at 6 p.m. Friday. There will be hot chocolate and cookies starting at 5 p.m. Visit tinyurl.com/YVA8EKSF. Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, has scheduled a Christmas Eve worship service from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday. There will be carols, communion, and candlelight. Visit tinyurl.com/47HYXN79. Mission Dorado Baptist Church, 4142 Fadre Road, has scheduled the annual Christmas Eve candlelight service at 5:30 p.m. Friday. Hot cider and cookies will be offered at the service. Visit tinyurl.com/KPCM6D6A. New Dawn Fellowship Church, 2110 East 10th Street, has scheduled a Christmas Eve candlelight service at 6 p.m. Friday. Listen to the true story of his birth long ago and hear of the hope that Jesus' life, death, and resurrection brings to us. We'll sing familiar Christmas carols together as we hold our brightly lit candles high, reflecting the light of Jesus throughout the world. Visit newdawnfellowship.com. Mary named to State Broadband Board, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray is one of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's three appointees to the Broadband Development Office Board of Advisors. I am honored to be appointed by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick to the Broadband Development Office Board of Advisors. It is a privilege to represent K-12 public education and the children and families of Texas, Mary said in a news release. High-speed, affordable broadband availability has been a priority of ours in ECISD for almost 2 years. Through innovative partnerships, we have made great strides in bringing reliable, affordable internet service to West Texas. During the same time, the CON-ECTOR Task Force developed the Ector County Digital Inclusion Acceleration Plan to make broadband service a reality for all citizens of Odessa and Ector County. Access to broadband provides opportunities for all Texas families, and I look forward to working hard as a member of this board, he added in the release. Man charged with assaulting ex-wife. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 54-year-old man was arrested after he assaulted his ex-wife with a knife and tried to smother her with a pillow. Alex Lycon Carrasco was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. The assault happened at 10:30 p.m. December 15th at the MCM Fun Dome located at 6201 East Highway 80, the affidavit stated. The complainant, Amelia Pepintenza, told police that her ex-husband Carrasco had attacked her with a knife and then tried to smother her face with a pillow. Pepintenza stated to police that she and Carrasco got into an argument that led to Carrasco throwing her on the bed, grabbing a steak knife, and putting it to her throat. The affidavit detailed, Pepintenza stated that Carrasco cut her face with a knife and then tried to smother her with a pillow. Officers saw a small cut on Pepintenza's right cheek, the affidavit stated. Officers also saw a scratch mark on the right side of Pepintenza's throat, as well as a scratch behind her left ear, consistent with her statement. Pepintenza told police that she was in fear for her life and believed that Carrasco would kill her. Officers made contact with Carrasco and stated there was an incident but wouldn't specify if it got physical, the affidavit stated. Carrasco granted police consent to enter the room where they saw a white pillow with blood on the front as well as a steak knife in the bathroom sink. Carrasco was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $40,000 and was still in custody as of Monday, jail records show. Man charged with making threats to OPD officers. A 64-year-old man was arrested after he made verbal threats to an Odessa Police Department officer. Robert Molina was charged with terroristic threat against a peace officer, a state jail felony, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. Officers were dispatched at 1:44 p.m. December 16th to Lucy's Cafe, located at 615 West Clemens Street, in reference to a disturbance, an OPD probable cause affidavit stated. Corporal Luis Garcia found the subject, identified as Molina, across the street from the business along the north side of the street. Corporal Garcia determined Molina was intoxicated and placed him in custody for public intoxication. While Corporal Garcia was transporting Molina to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center to be booked for public intoxication, the probable cause affidavit detailed that Molina repeatedly stated, "I'm going to kill you, Garcia, and I'm going to blow off your head with a .357 hollow point, B.I. bleep." Upon arriving at the ECLEC, Molina stated, "Garcia is a walking dead man," to jail staff. The affidavit detailed, Molina continued to threaten Corporal Garcia and speaking toward him in an aggressive manner. The affidavit stated, while being changed into jail clothing, Molina stated, "I'm going to bleep your mother," directing the statement at Garcia. Molina was booked into the ECLEC on December 17th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $4,000 and was still in custody as of Monday morning. Man charged with punching girlfriend in face. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 38-year-old man was arrested after he punched his girlfriend in the face. Johnny Ray Silvas was charged with continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony, and evading arrest or detention on foot, a Class A misdemeanor. Police were dispatched at 2:40 a.m. December 18th to the parking lot of Flair Taverna, located at 4555 East University Boulevard, the affidavit stated. OPD was attempting to locate a man wearing a blue shirt and black jeans who evaded officers on foot. When officers arrived at the scene, they made contact with the victim, identified as Crystal Chavez, who stated her boyfriend Silvas had punched her in the mouth and took some of her property. Officers saw Chavez bleeding from her mouth and she had a cut on the right side of her upper lip. Officers at the scene stated the man wearing a blue shirt and black jeans had evaded them on foot and was traveling north through the parking lot while they were attempting to detain him to investigate the assault, the affidavit stated. A short while later, officers found a man wearing a blue shirt and black jeans, identified as Silvas, in the 2700 block of Fair Palms Place, the affidavit detailed. Officers were still actively attempting to locate Silvas when they located him at this address. Police records check was run on Silvas, which showed having a previous assault family violence arrest, with the victim being Chavez, on October 18th, as well as being a suspect for an assault family violence charge, with the victim being Chavez, on March 18th. Silvas was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 18th. Jail records show he has two bonds totaling $26,500 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. Woman charged with choking boyfriend. A 36-year-old woman was arrested after police said she choked her boyfriend. Christy Rena Mills was charged with assault for strangulation or suffocation, family violence, a third-degree felony. The reported strangulation happened at 12:27 p.m. December 18th in the 27 block of Bagley Avenue, an Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated. The victim, identified as Curtis Lee Jenkins, told police that his girlfriend, Mills, had choked him and impeded his normal breathing pattern. An argument between Jenkins and Mills got physical when Mills placed her hands around the front of Jenkins' neck, which caused him to lose breath, the affidavit stated. Officers saw injuries on Jenkins' neck consistent with his statement. Mills was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 18th, jail records showed. She has one bond totaling $20,000 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. Obituary: Linda Ruth Gober, Midland. Linda Ruth Gober, 79, of Midland, passed away into the arms of her Savior on December 18th after a largely unknown battle with dementia. Linda bravely persevered through pain and worry and is now resting in the beauty and peace of heaven. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, December 22nd at Nellie Pickle and Welch. Funeral service will be held and live-streamed at 1 p.m. Thursday, December 23rd at the Crestview Baptist Church. Interment will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Linda was born on March 16, 1942, to Orbia O.A. and Alice Nunn in Wichita Falls, Texas. She met her lifelong love, Cliff, as a junior high student, and they went on to elope at 16. Linda's legacy of love will live on in her eldest son, David Gober of Odessa, devoted daughters, Dana Flood of Midland and Casey and Scott Thyssen of Midland, and numerous grandchildren. Linda was joyously met in heaven by the love of her life and husband of 58 years, Clifton Gober, sweet son Darren Gober, loving parents O.A. and Alice Nunn, her second mom, Aunt Julie, devoted big sister Louise Chance, sweet son-in-law Joe Flood, and beloved nieces, nephews, cousins, family, and friends. The family would like to express their gratitude toward Brookdale Assisted Living, Manor Park, Midland Memorial Hospital, Home Care Plus, and Hospice of Midland for their sweet care, as well as the family and friends who have reached out to lend a hand. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Dementia Society of America by mail to P.O. Box 600, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, 18901, or online at www.dementiasociety.org/donate to aid in their mission to provide care and resources to families struggling with dementia. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Everett Patrick Pat Pounds, Odessa. Everett Patrick Pat Pounds, 79, of Odessa, died Friday, December 17th in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. December 22nd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Rosa Garcia Bustamante Payon, Odessa. Rosa Garcia Bustamante Payon, 91, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 15th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, December 23rd at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. No need to put off COVID booster. Dear Dr. Roach, I had the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine in January and February this year, with moderate pain for a few days, several days after the second vaccine. I am 79 years old, and I am doing physical therapy for painful shoulders, rotator cuff tears in both shoulders, as well as arthritis. My physical therapy will continue until the end of December. If I get the booster shot now, can I continue with the physical therapy, or should I wait until January 2022 to get the booster shot? CG. Answer. Some people have had lighter reactions to the third shot, and some have had worse reactions. Overall, you are likely to get a similar reaction to a third shot as you did to the second. So I would plan on having a couple days of a sore arm. You might schedule the shot for right after physical therapy to minimize the effect. A third vaccine is recommended 6 months after the second vaccine for all adults and can be expanded by the time this gets published.
Dear Abby, common dog walking habit raises stink with readers. Dear Abby, I'm responding to your request for comments about your answer to Doggy Business, October 28th. Please implore your readers not to put their dog's poop in their neighbor's garbage cans, even if the cans are on the street. This may seem harmless, but I live near a park and daily dog walkers use my trash can like it's a public service. My garbage quickly fills with endless poop bags, sometimes between 5 and 10 a day. Garbage is collected only every other week in my community. I'm sure your readers can do the math. Then I end up having to work around all this poop, and not only does my garbage can perpetually stink to high heaven, but I have to be judicious with what I throw away myself. Rough materials will rupture those bags and poop gets all over the inside of the can. I'm currently saving up to modify my property's retaining wall so I can keep the receptacles away from the street, but I'm at the mercy of dog owners until I can afford this renovation. Please, if you have a dog, be a good neighbor. Be responsible for its waste. If you don't want to carry it, get your dog a harness or pack with a pocket and dispose of it in your own can when you get home. Peeved in the Pacific Northwest. Dear Peeved, I advised Doggy Business that disposing of his dog's waste in neighbors' garbage cans is a big no-no. After asking for readers' thoughts, and avalanche of responses descended. The vast majority agreed with me, expressing disdain at the practice and explicitly sharing the messy, smelly details of their experiences. Some areas require trash be placed in a large, sealed plastic bag in the receptacle. When garbage collectors pull the bag out, the small poop bags can spill out and the contents disperse onto the street. Worse, if the bags are thrown into a neighbor's garbage container after collection, those bags remain at the bottom and smell for days. Readers encourage dog walkers to take a larger bag with them or wear a fanny pack with multiple compartments to transport their pets' souvenirs back to their own home. Dear Abby, our nosy children have been pressuring us to explain their inheritance. I'm appalled. I was taught that this is something for the parents to tell, not the kids to ask. Several friends of ours who are executors for their parents are now being questioned by siblings while the parent is sick and fighting for life. Please explain to readers what is the best etiquette with regard to inheritance. Unsure in California. Dear Unsure, I know this can be a sensitive subject, but it is also an important one. Although some may not agree with me, I happen to be in favor of open communication regarding money matters. Too often, money and the promise of it is used to manipulate and control family members. This is not a matter of etiquette. If adult children are going to inherit, they need to learn early how to wisely and responsibly handle money. And if circumstances change and the estate is affected, the heirs should be given as much forewarning as possible so they are prepared and not shocked.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.